This episode of the Disney Film Project is sponsored by TouringPlans.com. Head over to TouringPlans.com and use their tools to save yourself time and money when you are at Walt Disney World or Disneyland. You can use the Lines application on your mobile phone, use the crowd calendar to figure out which parks to hit which days, or use the Touring Plans to save time and money waiting in line. TouringPlans.com is the sponsor of this episode of the Disney Film Project. Welcome again, everybody, to the Disney Film Project podcast. This is the show where we, your friendly neighbors and hosts, talk about the films of the Walt Disney Company, and we are glad you decided to listen again this week because we are thrilled to be here. I am Ryan Kilpatrick, host of this program, and with these fine folks, we run DisneyFilmProject.com, where we talk about the films of the Walt Disney Company, the shorts, and all these sorts of things. So make sure you go over there and check out the website, read the blogs, and get all the latest stuff on Disney and Disney films. Joining me, as always, are film experts. They have been recognized, and I believe the American Film Institute is holding a ceremony in their honor in the near future. That none of that is true, but they should, is what I'm saying here. We have first Mr. Todd Perlmutter, who's a blogger over at TouringPlans.com, chief technical officer at DisneyDrivenLife.com. He works at OnTheGo and MCO.com. And I believe Ashley did all the code for the video games in the movie that we are discussing today.
S-U-G-A-R, jump into your racing car at Sugar Rush, Sugar... I'm sorry.
Can I say how much I loved that song? It was awesome.
Yes, I love the whole concept of that game. So, because Cheryl and I are big, huge... I hate to jump right in, but... We're big, huge Mario Kart fans, so you know, there you go.
Oh yeah, no, that was awesome.
Yeah,
that's what I have to say about that.
Yes.
We also have Miss Brianna Alessio, who is a blogger over at Adventures in Brie, adventuresinbrie.blogspot.com, and spends the majority of her spare time watching Turner Classic Movies. Is that true?
That is a valid statement, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, don't have enough time to spend that time watching Turner Classic Movies anymore. But when I do, it is valuable treasure time.
Indeed. Indeed. Also joining us, of course, is the person who will edit this to make sense and not be just Todd and I geeking out over video game cameos, and that is Miss Cheryl Perlmutter, who you can find at about.me/CherylP3 or over on Twitter at CherylP3. How are you, Cruise Lady Cheryl?
I'm doing good. Can I say that one of the times I went to see this movie, I actually had to sit on the stairs in the theater because the theater was so crowded.
This was on the cruise ship.
Yeah, I was just waiting for that. Yeah, it was on the cruise ship. I don't have much sympathy for you. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I'm just saying those stairs are not comfortable. That's all I'm saying.
I've seen this movie 5 times. 3 of them are on a cruise ship.
Okay. Yeah. So Bree and I will be carrying on with the rest of the show without you.
Yes, we will.
In case you missed it, it was big stuff for the Disney company. Wreck-It Ralph released on November 2nd, the latest in the Disney animated classics. It is a huge, huge blockbuster movie. At least doing well. Let's put it that way.
It's doing very well.
It's doing really well because its production budget was $165 million, and it, in 2 weeks, has made $130 million.
And I would expect that to continue. I mean, there's not a lot of family fare out there for the foreseeable future, except there's a DreamWorks film that's coming out either this week or next week. Yes, it's doing very well. I mean, and I would imagine it's going to continue doing so because it's a good movie.
Yeah, Roger Ebert loves it. Which is usually this is not his forte of liking a movie.
No, not at all.
So I mean, he said it was an amazing movie, well done end to end. It is seldom that you see a movie that spans 5 generations of people liking it.
This is very true.
Right. So, because you have from the baby boomers on forward are all people who have some kind of life investment in this movie.
Yes, it's definitely one that spans the course of time. I mean, we should back up and say it's directed by Rich Moore, who has been somebody that John Lasseter has been pursuing personally for decades now to get to do a project first at Pixar and then at Disney. And Rich Moore has been working on The Simpsons for years and years and years. And then he went to Cal Arts. And so Lasseter knew him. Yes, and Futurama. This is very true. But Lasseter knew him from Cal Arts when he went back to visit Cal Arts and tried to get him to come to Pixar, and it didn't work. From what I hear from family, right, because his family lived in L.A. and he didn't want to move them up to Northern California. And when the Pixar deal went down, he called Rich Moore and said, "Come on over here. We got some stuff for you to work on," because this movie has been in the pipeline at Disney for almost 20 years.
More than 20.
Yeah. Was it more than 20?
Yeah, so it was initially conceived just after Tron came out.
Wow.
Holy malarkey.
Yeah. So, a long time ago. It's you know the whole story, right?
Yeah, well, I do, but please, enlighten the audience, Todd.
I'll go through it. The original concept of the movie was called High Score, and all they wanted was a guy who no longer enjoyed the video game that he lived in and wanted to go move to another video game. That was the initial concept. There was no name involved back then other than the name of the movie. Mm-hmm. Never happened. Later on, they named the guy Joe Jump because there was a popular series of games at the time called Jumpman.
I don't know if people remember that. That's when I first started hearing about it, was when it was called Joe Jump.
Yep, and that was in the 90s. And then it was never happened. And then it was revamped in the 2000s. They've been working on it for almost 10 years at this point, right?
Yeah. And it didn't really take off, per se, as an actual film until about 3 or 4 years ago. But that's when Rich Moore came in. He came in shortly after the Pixar merger, which is hard to believe is, what, almost 5 years ago now?
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's crazy. I mean, if you think about it, too, I mean, they just bought Star Wars, and you think that it was 2010 when they bought Marvel, and it's hard to believe that's even that far old at this point.
Which, by the way, we haven't done a show since that, but who's been talking about Star Wars on a Disney podcast from day one, people?
We have.
Yep.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and who's psychic?
Who were the people who were telling you that Avengers was going to be huge a year before it came out?
Yeah. These people.
That's right. who told you when Avengers came out that Coulson was coming back?
Us.
We did.
We hashtagged it.
Yep, we practically invented the hashtag.
I'm just saying, folks, you might want to keep listening, because if you want to hear the future of the Disney company.
It's here. It's now.
There you go.
It's fresh.
Know it. Yeah.
So since we're talking Rumorville, we what do we think? Hasbro or Lego is next?
Good question. They are going to.
It's a very good question. Yes,
I do predict it will be a toy company next.
I'm going to say Lego.
I would go Hasbro.
Yeah, I think Hasbro is probably an easier buy than Lego is because Lego is a bigger company these days. But there are the licensing deals with Star Wars and Lego brand, so you never know.
And Disney
and Avengers and all sorts of other things. Winnie the Pooh, lots of Disney stuff is licensed, cross licensed with Lego. So.
And Lego also has theme parks overseas already as well. So I mean, if they would buy Merlin or not, if that would be part of the brand or not.
Who knows?
It's all interesting. It's all interesting theory.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm ready for our first. Star Wars podcast. We're putting that on the schedule, folks. It's coming. Don't you worry.
Yes.
And if you, it's going to be like 4 hours.
If you're smart and clever, you can probably figure out when. That's all I'll say. That means you, Dennis.
But back to Wreck-It Ralph.
All right.
So the movie's been kicking around for quite some time. And they really started getting to work on it about, like we said, 3 or 4 years ago. And we've seen the teasers for this have been out for quite some time and shown kind of the depth of what it was going to be, because you saw Ralph, the character, the main character voiced by John C. Reilly, in the Bad Guys Anonymous meeting. I mean, we've probably been seeing those clips for over a year, I would say. Since Comic-Con last year is when I remember seeing the first one.
Yeah, they spent basically half the time they've been working on this movie has been spent going around to the various conventions and touting it and showing bits and pieces of it. So,
yeah, I think it's paid off.
Yeah, I think they really went for a more viral marketing angle for the movie than anything else. So, and I think it paid off for sure.
Well, I can tell you the fact that when we went to see the movie, my kids knew all the characters from playing the game on my iPad. That it worked pretty well.
Good. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and at the first preview we saw, we went to it was at Disney Quest at Downtown Disney.
Yeah.
And it was at the movie theater next door, but they had a preview event for the video game being added to Disney Quest. So there's like a room of like 10 video games for Fricka Felix Jr., and there's a couple of them elsewhere in Disney Quest, so when you go there, you can actually play like a full arcade stand-up type version of it.
It's really hard, though.
It's a lot harder than it is on your iOS device, just be aware of that.
Oh, well, that's not cool. I don't like that. I want a full-size Sugar Rush. That's what I want.
Me too.
Sit-in, like one of the sit-in games.
Yes,
that's what it really has to be like, and it has to be just like it is in the Let Wax Arcade. There, you know, you have to sit down, have the 10 racers, everybody picks. You know,
I will clear out my entire bedroom to make room for that machine.
No kidding, you'll sleep in it, won't you?
I would totally sleep in it.
You totally will. Yes. So people know that you can go to the official website, right, and you can play Heroes Duty and Sugar Rush as well as Fix-It Billet Jr. as well. Also, right?
No, I did not know that.
Now you do.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. It's a clever website, by the way, because you have to unlock content and you get points, and the higher your score, the more you unlock.
These are exciting times, people.
Yeah, I sat there for an hour getting lots of points.
Love it.
Back to the history of the movie just a little bit. So, yeah. Ralph wasn't always intended to be the protagonist.
Yes, I've read about this, that Felix, they went through a good portion of development with Felix being the guy. I can see why that doesn't work.
Yes. Also, Ralph wasn't originally called Ralph. He was called Wendell something.
Wendell something?
Wendell something. He was like, all he did was throw garbage at Felix, apparently.
Oh, okay. Well, because Fix-It Felix Jr. is based on Donkey Kong, right?
Yeah. Well, what we have now is based on Donkey Kong. I don't know that it was initially based on Donkey Kong, but yes, it is based on Donkey Kong. Wholesale. No question. I don't even think they hide the fact that it's based on Donkey Kong. Did you know that for the video game itself that's developed, they actually went to a guy who designed 8-bit video games in the 80s and had him design the game?
I did not.
Yes.
Oh.
So, that's dedication right there.
I just jump all over the place. This is going to be Todd today. Just so
It's okay. You're excited, and I can't blame you.
I know. The song in the end credits called Wreck-It Ralph, right? That song?
Yeah.
That is done by two guys named Buckner and Garcia. Okay, Garcia passed away, by the way. But he started work on it, but then basically Buckner finished it up. They originally in 1982 wrote a song called Pac-Man Fever, and there's a whole album, which I will link to in the show notes, I promise people, of songs that they wrote about video games.
Oh, that's exciting.
Okay, so they intentionally picked them out to write a song for the movie because they figured if you're going to have you need an 80s song about an 80s video game, right?
Right.
Right.
The three main video games that are in the movie that are all made up for purposes of the movie, okay, are Fix-It Felix Jr., Heroes Duty, and Sugar Rush, which we already mentioned. You can go play these on the website. But they represent different eras in the video game universe, okay? Fix-It Felix Jr. is a game that was created in 1982, according to the lore of the movie, just so everybody knows that, okay?
Okay.
And it was considered one of the most popular 2D platformers ever in that universe, okay? So it's 30 years old, right? Because it's 1982 to 2012, 30 years. Done, okay?
Right.
Sugar Rush was an interactive racing game released in 1997. Okay, so there's 15 years between those two. Okay? And all the racing takes place on an island of the same name. So the Sugar Rush is a racing game about an island called Sugar Rush. Okay? Sugar Rush Island. Okay? And if you look at the maps of it, it's very cool because it has that whole design of Magic Kingdom or Disneyland feel to the map, and or Neverland, that whole concept. It's all, like, in that map. It's very clever. Then you have Heroes Duty, which is a 2012 first-person shooter game. Again, separated by 15 years. So they represent the full 30 years of the story, essentially.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense now that you said it. Yeah.
I want to play Heroes Duty, too. I love that one.
You would be very jealous. I should tell you that at the preview they gave us hero medals.
Okay, shut up right now. Just stop talking.
But before we start diving into the plot, though, I mean, like, for just in case there are people listening who haven't seen the movie yet, first of all, go. I think we would all say, but I think what would we all say without rating it? We'll get to that at the end, but you know. In general, I think we all agree, go see this. It's a fun family movie.
The surge projector blows up and the arcade goes away.
Here we go.
In a fiery crash of doom.
Fiery crash, yep.
And as per usual, none of what was just said is true.
Yes. But it's on the Wikipedia page right now.
Yes. And I'm going to add a little little side note. Also, carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Very bad. Bad stuff. Don't do it, kids.
But we agreed, go see it.
Absolutely. Without question, this was the movie that I was secondly anticipating for the entire year or last few years. So,
may I say, although we never paid once to see this movie, I would totally pay the whole five times we would have seen this movie.
That is high praise from Cheryl Perlmutter, folks.
The one thing I wanted to mention, we both started on 2D and 3D. I don't think you have to, although I did like 3D, you don't have to pay to see the 3D.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I actually did see it in 3D, but I only saw it once. I didn't notice a whole lot in 3D, except maybe the scenes of Heroes Duty. Honestly, I didn't see much more than that. But.
The key point I noticed it was during some of the stuff in Sugar Rush, primarily the overshot of the island and the Rainbow Road, which we can get to what that means.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
But that's primarily where I noticed it, so.
So if you haven't seen it, we all agree, go check it out. But we are about to spoil it like no business, so if you haven't seen it, you know, go check out the movie, save the podcast, come back and listen later, and we'll talk all about it, and it'll be fun and exciting for the whole family. But first, there is a short attached to this film, a new quote-unquote hand-drawn animated short, Paper Man, which is fabulous.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's so beautiful and touching.
Yeah. It's done in, well, you can't really say black and white, but shades of gray, except for one color.
Yeah.
Right? The color is the color of the girl's lipstick.
Yes.
Do you know the characters' names and everything? Or should I just like go through it really quick?
I don't know the characters' names, but yes. just go for it.
Okay, the guy character is named George, and the girl character is named Meg, and the only other person in there is really the boss of George. There. Do you want to discuss it, Bree? You know, like never walk us through anything. I think Bree should walk us through this.
No, go right ahead.
Bree was probably crying and teary-eyed the whole time. I'm betting.
Okay, I'll go for it. Okay.
Yeah.
I actually didn't cry until it was toward the end. I'm bad at describing things, but I'm going to do the best I can. Okay. So we start by seeing George and Meg, and they're standing outside the train, and she walks up to him, and she's got a Is it him holding the pile of paper or is she holding it? I can't remember that.
They both have paper.
They both have paper, okay. And a piece of paper flies up into her face and they smile and they meet eyes and, you know, there's instant connection there. She gets on the train and as it pulls away, they're looking at each other. So he can't stop thinking about her. So then they pan to the scene of him in his office and he notices that in the next building over, directly across from him, there she sits. So whatever his job may be, he has a stack of paper beside him and he starts taking each piece and folding it into paper airplanes and throwing it through the window to try to get it through her window. I actually went to see this with my mom and we were laughing. The entire theater was laughing at just the many attempts, failed attempts.
Yeah.
And then he gets to the last piece of paper. And he just looks around and everyone is looking at him because as he goes to reach for it, the basket that has paper in it falls to the ground and makes a loud noise. So I can't remember. Didn't someone, his boss brought him a new stack, right?
Yeah, a new stack of paper. Yeah, Ryan, they're essentially TPS reports.
Oh, lovely.
Okay, that's what they look like to me. Yeah. So if you've ever seen them in other movies, and TPS report is a joke, so.
Okay. So, okay, this is where I get stuck now. The piece of paper that has the lipstick on it from her.
Started right. Dancing with the yellow, found its way to all the yellow failed airplanes and started dancing with it. With them.
This scene reminds me a lot of the brooms in Fantasia. Because all of the paper airplanes, which have all landed in one place, all of a sudden come to life and start dancing. So as George is, you know, very sullen walking out of the building, all of the paper airplanes start following him and dancing.
Except for one. Which makes it to a flower shop.
Exactly, which is the one with the lipstick. But it's so cute because all of the paper airplanes start coming after George and the music goes in time with them. And that's when I started crying.
I love the way they push him around too. Like he keeps trying to brush them off of, and he keeps trying to escape out of them and they keep like pushing him back. They won't let him go because they're trying to steer him to meet her. And that's what's going on. The other one went to go get her.
Exactly.
And bring to him.
So all of the airplanes are attaching themselves to him and they're pushing them toward her direction. And then she sees the paper in the flower shop with her lipstick on it, recognizes it, and starts following the paper in the direction it's leading her. So the music's building up as, you know, they're getting closer to each other. It pushes him through the train, her through the train. Finally, they meet on the platform and there they are looking at each other. And that's how it ends. And by that time, I couldn't see the screen because I was bawling. She's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really a gorgeous piece. It's as good as, you remember how I liked the La Luna in front of, I can't remember which movie it was in front of. It's like they're really hitting it with these shorts lately. They've really got their groove there again, I think.
Yeah, I think La Luna was before Brave, right?
Yeah, it was. And I think with this, they found the way to do hand-drawn, because this isn't hand-drawn animation, right? It's drawn on a computer.
Yes.
But it looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks like it's done with a Wacom tablet, you know, where they just brush onto the tablet.
Yeah. I mean, it has that look that you want from a hand-drawn film, and just, I mean, I was just blown away with what I saw of it. I mean, it's just crazy.
Can I just mention the one scene that I love is the woman with the little kid? And then she takes
with the balloon.
The little kid and moves him away from the guy with all the papers on him.
Also, can I point out the other thing that you notice is Clark Kent is on the train, I'm just saying.
Is he?
Yeah, if you look, it's old-fashioned Clark Kent in the suit with the hat and the glasses.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would definitely rank that as one of my favorite Disney shorts, for sure.
Yeah, if they keep putting out shorts like this before movies, it's just going to be ultimately fantastic. Because before they were kind of okay, or they were playing to what they already knew, like older, like characters that already existed. But I like the cleverness of going outside the comfort zone to present something new.
Yep, I agree completely. I mean, like I like the Toy Story shorts that they've been doing with the Pixar films, but doing something new with the shorts. I mean, that's what it's there for, right? It's there to experiment and to do some fun stuff.
Yeah, and yes, I love the fact that they are still doing shorts, like, even from, you know, it started. Yes. What was the very first Disney short?
Alice, one of the Alice shorts would have been in the 20s.
Right, so, I mean, to have that continuously, you know, as a tradition from the 20s till now is just amazing in itself.
Pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, so on to the main event.
Dun, dun, dun!
Right. Can we talk about all the voices first? Because I have a load of Star Wars. Other than Disney owning Star Wars, I have a ton of Star Wars references here.
Yes, there are a metric ton.
There really
Star
are.
Wars references.
Yeah.
All right, so the four main characters, we have John C. Reilly voicing Wreck-It Ralph. We have Sarah Silverman, who plays Vanellope von Schweetz.
Sorry, I just wanted to do that before anyone else did.
Fair enough. Jack McBrayer as Fix-It Felix Jr. and Jane Lynch as, what is her name? Sergeant Calhoun.
Yes. Tamora Jean Calhoun. That's actually
Tamora
her full name.
Tamora Jean Calhoun.
That's her full name, yeah.
Got it. All right. A finer voice cast I don't think has been seen in a Disney film since The Lion King. That's what I'm saying to you.
Yeah, it worked on every possible level. I don't know how they nailed it so well.
I completely agree. And can I put in a very kind word for the one and only Mr. Alan Tudyk as King Candy?
I love Alan Tudyk. He is amazing.
Yeah, though we all miss Wash, Firefly Flan's Bronco.
Yes. First of all, love him from that.
Yes.
Second of all, doing the best Ed Wynn from Alice in Wonderland impression you could have ever found.
I didn't even know that he had the voice capabilities, you know, the range. I just always thought he was a really good actor. So I was very
impressed. But I mean, it's amazing. I mean, he's doing Ed Wynn.
He totally is. It was intentional. Yeah. I mean, there was a whole article I read just about how he loves the character and how he wanted to do it, and that was what he brought to the table for the character.
And amazing. Todd, you know where we know him from?
Besides Firefly?
Yes. Young Justice.
Yeah, he's done a lot of voices for the DC pantheon of animated series over time, including Flash and Green Arrow. Barry Allen Flash, by the way, not Wally.
Yes, that's good. It's good to clarify those things.
I know. For the three people who understood.
Yeah, yes. Indeed.
I know it's more than three people, everyone. Sorry.
Cheryl, the Star Wars references, if you please.
Tapper was voiced by Maurice LaMarche, who did voices in many things. One of them was a Star Wars The Old Republic video game.
Cool.
Beer Papa was voiced by done by John DiMaggio, who is Manly Dan in Gravity Falls.
Manly Dan? I know who he is. He's the lumberjack dude.
And then he also did General Grievous in Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Woohoo!
I know who that is.
Yes, we know who General Grievous is.
Jamie Elfman did the voice of Francis Fluggerbutter. And he's also done Star Wars Old Republic video game.
Yeah, can I also say it's Francis? I know people keep saying it's Francis, but according to the official site, it's Francis.
I said Francis.
No, it's Rancis, no F.
Oh.
That's a horrible name.
Yeah, it is. It's like Rancid.
Well, he was a horrible person.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Then he is Rancid.
Marvin Jarvis voiced Satine, or Saltine. They also say Saltine. I think it's Satine.
Satine.
it's actually Diablo, by the way, which is the funnier part of the whole thing.
Is voiced by the Star Wars Old Republic video game. Roger Craig Smith voiced Sonic the Hedgehog in Wreck-It Ralph. He also voices Captain America.
Woohoo!
And he did Star Wars The Old Republic video game. Kyle Hebert, who does the voice of Ryu, did both the Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes and did Star Wars The Old Republic video game.
Cool.
That's all the connections I've got, people.
Can I add something to your mix there? I just wanted to say that Roger Craig Smith isn't just Sonic the Hedgehog for this movie. He is Sonic the Hedgehog, just in case people didn't know that.
I had a feeling.
Yeah, a lot of the characters that they got, if the actual voice actor was available, the actual voice actor did it in this movie. So
yeah, I was like, one of those guys was the Street Fighter actually does stunts apparently for Kicking It now for Disney. So that must have been really interesting to go say, hey, I have to go across the studio to go do the voice with this guy. I'll be right back.
Nice.
Cool.
That made it easy for him. An easy commute.
I don't know if it's the same studios or not. I assume they're close to each other.
One would think.
I would hope.
Yes, indeed. All right. So if you've seen the trailers, and if you haven't, you've been living under a rock. You know the basic premise of the movie, which is that Ralph, who is the villain in Fix It Felix Jr., the video game that, like we said, loosely based on Donkey Kong. Actually, not really all that loosely, but based on Donkey Kong, is upset with his station in the game. So the movie opens with a nice 8-bit version. It zooms into the console, the game, the stand-up game, and shows us how the game works with Ralph narrating, talking about what, you know, the fact that he gets thrown off the building every day and he has to live in the dump, and he's tired of being the bad guy because he goes in and he does his job and he wrecks the place, and you know, he ends up having to sleep in the dump and all this kind of stuff. And so we transition from the 8-bit to the actual animation, the computer animation, and showing him living in the bricks once the games are over for the day. And we see that he's in a support group, Bad Guys Anonymous, where there's a plethora of video game cameos of bad guys from other video games, and they're all urging him to, you know, it's okay to be a bad guy. That doesn't mean you're a bad guy, as Zangief says.
Yes. Do you want the list of Bad Anonymous members?
Roll it out, because
okay.
I knew you had it.
They are Zangief, who's obviously everybody at this point knows who Zangief is. He was one of the original wrestler bad guy from Street Fighter. Okay. Also, M. Bison is the other Street Fighter character who's in Bad Anonymous. He's the big tall guy with no pupils in the red outfit with the black cape.
There you go.
Okay. Who gives the Disney point, right? Did anyone else catch that? He gives the Disney point.
Yes. That.
Are you going turbo? there's Clyde, the orange ghost from Pac-Man, right?
Yes.
There's Neff, who is the rhino wizard from Altered Beast. Okay, the big bad guy in Altered Beast. There's Dr. Eggman, also known as Dr. Robotnik, who is the mustache goggle guy from Sonic the Hedgehog. Okay. There's Bowser, also known as King Koopa, okay, from various Mario games. Okay, Cyril the Zombie from House of the Dead.
Love that.
Yes, he was quite amusing.
Also, my favorite of the cameos, besides Zangief, who steals, I think, the bad guys, so to speak.
Agreed.
Kano the Cyborg from Mortal Kombat. Okay, who unexpectedly does his heart rip fatality on the zombie.
I love that scene so much.
I mean, but in a Disney movie, to see the heart rip fatality, which obviously they couldn't kill someone, so they took someone who was already dead to get away with it, I thought that was really clever on their part.
Yeah, it was. I was shocked to see that.
And the guy who they call Satine, or Satan, right? Or I should also say Saltine, as people are calling him online. That's supposed to be Diablo from the Diablo video games, which did have a stand-up arcade version.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so I thought that was very clever. I there's a couple more in there. I just can't – I don't recognize them enough to know who they're supposed to be.
So my favorite part, though, of the guys – of the Bad Guys Anonymous meeting is we see them sitting in a conference room, which you've seen – you know, if you've seen the trailers, that's the main trailer that they've run. What I love is when they leave that conference room, it's actually them going out of the little box in the middle of the Pac-Man game where the ghosts live.
Yes.
And you see that in 8-bit. That was fabulous.
Yes, I love it. I love that.
That they had the cleverness to do stuff like that throughout the movie, by the way, was really well done.
Yeah. Everyone who was in my theater laughed hysterically when Ralph picked up the cherries and walked out.
Yes.
No kidding, right? I mean,
that was great.
Clever. And then they were like big, giant, real cherries.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the great part. He does it in 8-bit, and then he goes back to Game Central Station, which that's the next part of the movie. Everybody goes back to Game Central Station to go back to their own game. And Game Central Station, in case you couldn't tell, is a power strip, basically, where all the games are plugged into. And they travel between games by going through the cords that the games are plugged into.
Yes.
By the way, I'm going to sound like a total geek, but I cried when during that scene when they first showed them going into the power strip, because I said that was the first time during Wreck-It Ralph where I said, oh my goodness, there's a reminder how amazingly genius and wonderful Disney is. And that's when I started crying. Anyway, sorry, gone.
No, it's totally cool. I mean, obviously, so Game Central Station is obviously playing on Grand Central Station, right?
Yes.
It's intentional.
Absolutely.
Now, the reason why for that is because a lot of the initial meetings about the movie were done in New York City.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And they'd meet up in Grand Central Station, then go wherever they were going to go for lunch that day or something like that. So it just became a part of the movie because of the meetings. So I thought it was clever. That and the whole Surge Protector thing is hysterical.
Love it.
State your name.
Not again.
Well, it even looks like Grand Central Station because I was there not very long ago. In fact, a couple of days ago. And I was just sitting there going, wow, it looks exactly like Game Central Station.
It really is. It's just amazing. You know, you were talking about the transition between the regular and the 8-bit. I thought it's interesting to note that the movie was – the characters of Felix and Ralph were originally supposed to all be 8-bit throughout the movie.
Oh, but that would have been bad.
Well, that's why they change it, because they realize that they can't make 8-bit characters emote, right? And so people weren't going to connect with them if they did that. But I thought it was clever that they even conceived of doing that up front. But I like how they get away with having some of that in the movie.
It was tastefully done.
Yeah. That's all.
Yep, I agree. But it's great because Ralph goes back to his game, you know, all upset. You know, he's still not over the fact that he doesn't want to be a bad guy anymore. And when he gets back to Fix-It Felix Jr., the other characters, just as he's settling into the dump, he sees them in the penthouse of the building that he goes to wreck every day. And they're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the game. They're shooting off fireworks and Felix is doing dancing. And my favorite interaction between Ralph and Felix comes when he comes up to the penthouse and knocks on the door to try to get in the party. And Felix, it's great because they could have made him a villain, right, in the movie, but he's not. He's sympathetic to Ralph in this situation. He's like, well, we really don't, you know, you could see his thought process of, you know, well, we really don't want you here, but it would be kind of rude not to invite you inside. And Ralph finally is able to get inside by saying he's never had a piece of cake and they have cake in there.
Well, I think what's going on, right, is what they were saying in the Bananon meeting is that the characters are programmed to act a certain way, right? And just as Ralph is programmed to act like a bad guy and be the bad guy, Felix is programmed to be the good guy. And we get to see some of that later on in the movie, is that he's almost as frustrated in points of this movie as Ralph is.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's an important dichotomy that's going on. They're yin and yang to each other, intentionally.
Can I just say the part with the Coke bottles as binoculars was so funny?
Yes.
There's a lot going on in that party, too.
Yes.
They have almost as many cameos in the 3 seconds that you're in Game Central Station as you are in, as in the party, basically. Because they're dancing on a Dance Dance Revolution full-size floor, so not the small game, but like the disco-type floor, okay? And I love that the way the Nicelanders move.
Yes, they move like they're 8-bit.
Right, they don't just move like they're 8-bit, but they kind of jump along too, right? They don't move with a consistent field of motion.
Yes.
Right. So and they always move at right angles.
Yep.
Right, like they're stuck in blocks, because that was original video games. You could always only move up, down, left, and right. There was no diagonal for a little bit, and then they added diagonal later on. That was a big upgrade, folks.
Yeah.
Indeed, all my fun 8-bit games on the iPad are still up and down, backwards and forwards.
Well, yeah.
I wouldn't want it any other way.
Fair enough.
What I love about the party is, you know, Ralph is just trying to enjoy himself, and of course he just makes a mess of things. He knocks the ceiling down on Felix. He, you know, he messes up the cake because he gets into this argument with this guy Gene, who, I don't know about you guys, you guys are wrestling fans, he reminded me of Mean Gene Okerlund.
I think that's why he was named Gene. He looks like Mean Gene Okerlund. Absolutely,
yes, 100%.
Except Mean Gene Okerlund is nicer than Gene in the video game. I'm sorry.
Well, everyone is nicer than Gene in the okay.
That Gene in the video game, you know who he reminded me of?
Who?
Thurston Howell from Gilligan's Island.
Oh, because he's making the martinis all the time.
Yes, which is nice. A nice touch.
No, but and also he's got that snooty, which the Howells were. That's the Howells. They were snooty.
Well, the Nicelanders were biased, right? From their point of view, they're programmed not to like Ralph, right? Again, you have to keep in mind the motivations of each of the characters, right? It's as hard for them to accept that Ralph is anything but just acting bad, right?
Right.
You know, they can't accept that he's got a good heart, which is part of the whole point of the movie.
Yep. Yeah, so Gene gets into this, you know, fight basically with Ralph about the fact that he can't be a good guy and that he can't have a medal and all this kind of stuff, which is what kind of sets things in motion, right? Because he says, if you ever had a medal, you could come live here in the penthouse. And that's what sets Ralph off, that he should go and get himself a medal. And that's where he leaves, he heads back into Game Central Station. He actually goes to visit Tappers, which it was a famous game. Did you play Tapper, Todd?
Are we talking the original Tapper or what you're probably thinking of?
I'm talking original Tapper.
So I wasn't old enough to sit in a bar where they served beer and play the original Tapper.
Oh, okay.
Right, so the original Tapper was a game made for adults to be in bars, and the character served beer, and they had to make a kid's version of the game because kids wanted to go play the game and they couldn't. So then they made what's called Root Beer Tapper, which is probably what which is really what's depicted in the movie.
In the movie, yeah. So I'm not going to say that I played the original version.
There you go.
I'm not going to say that I didn't.
I'm lying. I'm not saying either.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I hung around a lot of bowling alleys when I was a kid.
And yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough.
Cheryl and I are taking the fifth on that one. But what we're saying is Ralph is and again, we get the 8-bit view of all the video game characters sitting in this bar with Tapper slinging root beers at everyone. And Ralph manages to meet one of the soldiers from a first-person shooter game, Heroes Duty, and inadvertently gets out of him that the winner gets a medal. And, of course, Ralph knocks the guy out and decides that he needs to go into Heroes Duty to win the medal. Which is where he encounters Sergeant Calhoun, voiced by Jane Lynch, who is hysterical.
Yes, she is.
I'm just laughing. My favorite line in this whole part of it is when she asks, "What's the first rule of Heroes Duty?" He goes, "No butts, no cuts, no coconuts."
That's great. This is actually the scene that we're about to discuss is my favorite in the entire film.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
The look of panic on Ralph's face with the bugs. Maybe because it reminds me of myself and how I act when I see one small bug in the house. I don't know. just like his reaction to everything, the way I know I'm jumping ahead here, but the way he sticks his face in front of the poor little girl playing the game and screaming at her. It's just fabulous. I laughed so hard. Oh,
It is rather funny because Ralph gets sucked in, and of course, it's Jane Lynch's character leading the shooter around to destroy the cybugs, which is these, like, they're basically cyborg bugs that are attacking everything, and it's like they're everywhere. And if you've ever played a first-person shooter, especially some of the new ones, they can be overwhelming like that, where there's just stuff flying at you all over the place. They do such a great job of capturing that feeling as they're taking Ralph through as basically the first person. But he has to defeat everything, gets just knocked all over the place the first time through until the game ends. And they have to go back to the beginning. But instead of doing that, Ralph decides to climb the beacon, this large tower of light, because that's where the metal is. And he climbs up there to take the metal away from everything else.
The man who's actually, who presents him with the medal, the picture of the man we see on the screen, is actually voiced by the gentleman who is on the Allstate commercials.
That's General yes. Hologram, by the way.
Mr. Dennis Haysbert.
There we go. Yeah.
Who I might add is best known for his roles in Major League as Pedro Serrano. Yes. But it's important to note too that John C. Reilly, when he was brought onto the movie, he had Jack McBrayer, Sarah Silverman, and Jane Lynch were already signed on, or eventually were. And when they started doing the voice work, so typically when they do voice work for these films, they do everybody just comes in, records their lines, several different readings of them, and goes their separate ways. And what he said to the producers was, look, you've got four of the best improvisational comedians working in Hollywood, like, let us all come into a room and bounce things off each other. And so they weren't able to do it every time, but he and Jane Lynch, especially in this piece, I believe, were in the same room while they're recording these lines. So it was easy for them to sort of bounce stuff off each other and do the lines or throw stuff in. And that's where you get, I don't know what was ad-libbed and what wasn't, but the fun stuff of, like, you know, Jane Lynch talking to the first person shooter about, you know, kiss your mama's goodbye or whatever, something like that. And he says, I love my mama. Doing that in the sound booth, you know?
Yeah, the time for kitten whispers and tickle fights is over.
I love it. And you could even see the chemistry, despite the characters being animated. Like, you could see the chemistry was evident between the characters, too.
Oh, completely. I mean, that's why I say this voice cast is amazing.
Yeah.
But Ralph does collect his medal. He accidentally hatches one of the cybugs, which attacks him, and as he's trying to fight it off, he stumbles into one of the escape pods and gets launched out of the game. And so he's flying through and actually flies out of Hero's Duty and crash lands into Sugar Rush.
Yes. It's kind of odd how he bounces around. He hits, like, certain characters, like, he, like, slams into, like, Sonic and a few other characters while he's in the arcade, too. So, I mean, in Game Central Station.
By the way, can we mention really quickly that in Game Central Station earlier in the film, we meet Q-Bert?
Yeah, we do.
Not just Q-Bert, but Q-Bert and all his friends.
Exactly. And that's another scene I cried at, which we won't get into. But, yes.
Q-Bert looks so sad.
That's why I cried. I was like, you can't kill his game.
Yeah, actually, there's actually lots of characters that you see in Game Central Station. I just want to...
I know, but Q-Bert is the most important.
I can go through them really quick if people want, just so we can knock them out and be done with it. Right? Because people are probably screaming that we haven't even mentioned them yet, right? So you see the other three Pac-Man ghosts, right? Inky, Blinky, and Pinky. Okay? You see Dig Dug, a Pooka, and a Fryer, all from Dig Dug. Okay, those are, like, Dig Dug is the guy who pumps things underground. Sonic the Hedgehog, we've already mentioned. You also see him at Felix's party, and like I said, he gets hit by the rocket, and he's in the closing credits as well. Tails is in a picture in Tapper's Bar. Tails is Sonic's sidekick buddy, just so people know. You see Princess... So Mario... And Luigi are mentioned, just Mario's mentioned. I don't think they mentioned Luigi in the whole movie, okay? But you never see them, but you do see, like we said, we saw Bowser. You also see Princess Daisy from the various Mario games and Rosalina, who was from Super Mario Galaxy.
Yes, okay? I can spot them.
And they're walking along talking about something, presumably Mario.
Yeah.
Okay. You see the monkey from Super Monkey Ball. You see Michelea from Shining Force. Let's see. You see lots of other Street Fighter characters. I'm not going to name them all because I think like they're all there.
Yeah.
You see other Mortal Kombat characters. You see the Paperboy from Paperboy.
Yeah, that's right.
So what's very funny is there's the dinosaur character from the game Primal Rage, but they actually used the model for the dinosaur from the Meet the Robinsons.
To represent Sauron.
So I thought it was very clever because if you look very closely, they actually did that. But that's who it's supposed to be. You see Frogger hopping around, right?
Oh, I missed that.
Yes, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yep. You don't see her in Game Central Station, but she was the watch for Litwax. Okay, that's Juni from Dance Dance Revolution. Right. Remember, she's the one who says, "Okay, guys, the arcade's closed." Right.
Oh yeah, yeah, right at the very beginning. Right? Yes.
Yep. You actually see the paddles and ball from Pong. Okay, Pong being...
Okay, that I didn't catch. That's
Pong
awesome.
Being the first publicly sold video game. There were other video games before that, but it was the first one that was marketed and produced and sold in stores. You see a Space Invader on the wall in Tappers also. You see one of the Kixes. That's the little things that go around in the line drawing game. It's hard to describe what Kix is without looking at it. But you see them. You see Peter Pepper from Burger Time.
Oh, okay.
Right, and then, like I said, the Mario is only mentioned by name and not in the movie. Lara Croft also mentioned by name but not in the movie, right?
Oh yeah.
and the other two objects that he pulls out of the box besides Zangief's underwear.
Yes.
Oh, the mushroom.
The mushroom for the Mario games, which is seen in lots of Mario games. Though it's specifically sized to be like the one from Mario Kart, if you
yes.
Okay. And you also the exclamation point comes from Metal Gear Solid. It's the alert when you have somebody in your sights. You know, when being targeted.
I was wondering what that was from.
Yeah, that's from Metal Gear Solid. So okay. There also Tron is above one of the entrances in Game Central Station.
Really?
Yes. There's a hidden Mickey in the movie.
Where?
So it's not in the arcade. It's outside the arcade. Is when you see the outside shot of the arcade, there's a billboard in the background. And Mickey Mouse is on the billboard in the background.
Oh.
Yes. And, and Sora from Kingdom Hearts is seen not... You don't see it in the bar, but when they go to the 8-bit version of Tappers, that's when you see... That's about it. I'll get to the other thing. There's another list. There's like two more lists to go over, but we'll go get to them when we come to them. So I just figured that way we got all the stuff that I caught and like made sure I was accurate on that I had actually seen.
That's a lot though, dude.
Yeah, it is. And that's not even all. That's the scary thing. I'm sure, 100% sure it's not everything. That's just what I...
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. But... So one of the things you have to – the great thing about this movie is that they set up the rules of how the gaming world works. It's just – it's like Toy Story in that sense to me because, like, they set up the rules of, like you said at the very beginning of, all right, guys, the arcade's closed and everybody goes and does their thing and all this kind of stuff. And so what happens here is when the kids come in the next morning to Litwax Arcade and they open up Fix-It Felix Jr., Ralph's not there. So Mr. Litwax puts a – sign over the edge that says out of order, and that's when Felix and the Nicelanders realize, oh, if Ralph's not here, we might get unplugged, and of course that's the end for them, right? They can't go anywhere, or they could go to Game Central Station and beg like Hubert.
Mm-hmm.
So Felix has to set off to go find Ralph, and so he starts venturing off to see what's going on before we end up figuring out what's going on with Ralph and Sugar Rush. So Felix has to set off on his heroic journey. Meanwhile, Ralph is in Sugar Rush. The bug disappears, and he's looking around for his medal, and he's trying to climb this candy cane tree because it's Sugar Rush. Everything's made of candy.
everything.
Yes. And that's when he meets Vanellope von Schweetz. I was waiting. I was afraid Todd was going to do it again.
Von Schweetz!
There it is.
By the way, you get her name, right? Did you read the... So the character's name initially was Penelope, but then they decided they wanted to make all the characters have some kind of flavoring to them. So it's Vanilla plus Penelope is Penelope.
Nice. So as Ralph is climbing the tree, there's Vanellope, you know, poking fun at him and telling him not to grab the double striped candy canes because they disappear and all this kind of stuff, and just really picking at him, just like if you've seen the trailer, you've seen it. And that's, she steals the medal, and we don't really know why at the time, mm-hmm. but we find out later it's because after hours in Sugar Rush, they have a race to determine who the racers will be the next day. Because before, when we see the game out in the arcade, they say it's, you know, new racers all the time, every day new racers. And so that's where we find out that King Candy, voiced by the amazing Alan Tudyk, holds a race every day. And you have to have a gold coin to get in the race. And so all these racers get into the race. But for whatever reason, they don't want Vanellope to race because she's a glitch. Because what they see is, like, she kind of glitches out a little bit and disappears from the game.
I like how she calls it.
Don't know what that means.
I like how she calls it Pixlexia.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a weird thing, right? Because none of the other characters are doing it. But we don't really know why she's doing this, right? We don't know why. But she steals Ralph's medal to get into the race and kind of disappears and leaves him in a candy swamp, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, that is a good term.
Yeah, what else do you call it? So there you go.
Yeah. But meanwhile, back over at Heroes Duty, imagine, now Ralph's a big guy with big fist, and so he managed to make it through Heroes Duty okay. Now imagine Felix going into Heroes Duty looking for Ralph, because Hubert told him that's where he was. Because he speaks Hubertese. I don't know if you knew that.
I want to speak Hubertese.
Don't we all, really?
I wish they had, like, a that would be cool for when they do a DVD, if they had, like, the Hubertese translation guide, and so you could, like, pause and look up what he actually says.
Yeah. It'll be like Klingon. No one will understand, but it's so cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's like subtitles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant idea. Cheryl, I agree.
Yep. Yeah. But Felix goes into Heroes Duty and is trying to figure out what's going on. And, of course, it's crazy in there with all the cybugs going crazy. And he meets Calhoun and figures out that one of the cybugs has escaped. And they have to go chasing after Ralph, trying to figure out where he went to. And he gets Calhoun's backstory. Who I believe the other guy says the most tragically programmed backstory ever.
And it really is.
It really, really is.
Sorry.
Okay.
We can continue.
It's all right. Because her backstory is she found this guy, apparently also in Heroes Duty. And she was able to, you know, they fell in love, and at the last minute, as they're getting married, the cybugs came in and ate him. Now, while they were doing that, she pulled a gun out of her wedding dress from parts unknown.
No one knows, but it was a big gun.
It was a very big gun. And a very form-fitting dress.
And I love the look on her face when she's just unloading the gun into the cybug that just ate her fiancé, because I guess they never finished their marriage, so...
Yeah.
It is amusing. But yes, that's the tragic backstory that she has to deal with.
Because she never set up a perimeter detail.
Yep.
Sadly.
Yep. So they have to go and track Ralph and... into Sugar Rush. So
yes.
Everybody now at this point is in the Sugar Rush game.
Well, wait. Before they go into the Sugar Rush game, though, I have another list.
All right.
Yeah. Let's talk about Graffiti.
Graffiti, you say?
Yeah, so when they're standing in the room that's the entrance to Sugar Rush, there's a lot of graffiti on the wall, and all of it is game references, video game references.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's a name on the wall that says Jenkins. That's a reference to a Leroy Jenkins, which is a World of Warcraft meme. Everyone can look this up. I'll make sure it's in the show notes, okay? Basically, it's about a raid in World of Warcraft, and the guy named Leroy Jenkins gets everybody killed, and then it finally ends with him going, "At least I have chicken."
Okay.
These are video game things. Shang Long was here. So here's the thing, right? Shang Long was never a character in Street Fighter. Okay, if you're yelling at me telling me he is, you're wrong. By the way, folks, if you're listening, okay, it is in fact one of the most famous game hoaxes in all of gaming history. Okay, basically, what happened is there was a bad translation in the original Street Fighter, where there's in one of Ryu's victory speeches. Okay, Ryu's fighting move, the flying uppercut, is actually named in what would be the transliteration of the Chinese, the Sheng Long. Okay. But because of the bad translation, it reads like he's referring to someone named Shang Long. So that's everybody figured they were referring to a hidden character in the game, and thus, like, video game magazines on April Fool's Day, back before people realized magazines did April Fool's Day articles, started writing articles about Shang Long, and it became a very involved thing over time.
Can I say something really quick about Street Fighter? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It's actually a personal side note. For those of you who do not know about me, I was not a girly girl. Like, growing up, I had three brothers. So, you know, we were playing video games all the time. The first video game I ever played was Pong, but the second video game I ever played was Street Fighter. My family and I used to go to the laundromat, like, every Sunday or something, and there was a big Street Fighter machine right in a laundromat, and my brother and I would put in our change and play it every week.
You really need to watch the episode of Gravity Falls where they make fun of Street Fighter.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do. All right. The next piece of graffiti is one that says Aerith Lives. So Aerith was a video game character in the game Final Fantasy VII. Okay. And she is well known for being one of the most memorable video game deaths ever, to the point where people would cry and write stories and poems about how great her death was. I kid you not. One of the most touching characters ever in a video game, and she dies. So there you go. Okay. Then, of course, also written on the wall is one of the most famous statements from any video game ever: "All your base are belong to us."
Yes.
Okay. Which is from one of the worst translated video games of all time, known as Zero Wing. Mm-hmm. Okay. You just have to look these things up. You'll have to trust me on this, folks. But it's hard to fathom. But there, you can see the entire video from Zero Wing as well online. You can just look these things up. So there you go. Those are the graffitis that are on the wall.
All right. So everybody is in Sugar Rush at this point. We have Felix and Sergeant Calhoun are looking for the Cybug, because as Calhoun explains, the Cybug can multiply and lay eggs, and then all of a sudden it would take over every game in the arcade, starting with Sugar Rush. And Ralph is there trying to get away from Vanellope and the King Candy, because he comes in and basically destroys the race so that they can't hold the race. Because Vanellope is there, she gives her coin, which is Ralph's medal, and she's trying to race, but King Candy doesn't want that to happen, and Ralph comes in covered in sticky candiness and just wrecks the entire race, basically.
Can I say I liked this, because the scene of him like that was in the preview, but I didn't make the connection the first time I saw it, that it was Ralph.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought it was some other video game character that I didn't know.
Yeah.
So I thought it was very cleverly done.
Dallas.
Yeah, I agree. But that stops the game, which is what King Candy wants, and Ralph gets taken to King Candy to figure out like who he is, why he's there, that sort of a thing. And this is when King Candy says, you know, oh, well, we have the race, and you can't do this, and you can't get in the way, and Ralph manages to escape because he's trapped in a cupcake, but he rolls out the window and shatters the cupcake and manages to get away.
Yes.
I think we need to talk about the scene with King Candy's guards and the song that they sing.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
You want to get that, Bree? Because I know how important that is to you.
Yes, it's so important to me. Okay, so huge Wizard of Oz reference here. Oreo, Oreo. And they're all Oreo cookies. Oh my gosh.
Best gag in the whole movie.
Seriously.
Yes, actually there are a lot of, well, most of the gags are Sugar Rush, because Sugar Rush is really the big chunk of the movie. But so King Candy's two henchmen are Winchell and Duncan, and they're donuts. Right.
Yeah, they are.
And Duncan is named after Dunkin' Donuts, and Winchell is named after Winchell's Donut House, right, which are the two biggest donut chains in the U.S.
Yep. I love it. I want donuts here.
I want Oreos, personally.
And that.
Yeah.
I want a Metal Gear Zero. Oh, wait, I have that.
You know what? Done.
Yeah, all right. That's enough from you.
Yeah.
Okay. But Ralph manages to break out of the castle. He goes and he finds Vanellope, because right as the other racers are coming in, Vanellope's trying to put together her cart that she's going to race with. And the other racers don't want her to race because she's a glitch. And they basically destroy her cart, and Ralph steps in to kind of chase them off. Mm-hmm. And they strike a deal, right? His medal's gone because she used it to enter the race. But the only way she can get it back for him is by winning the race. So they strike a deal. She'll help him win he will help her win the race, and she'll give him the medal.
Yes. Sugar Rush racer names. Want to go through them? The ones that I can remember. There are a lot of them, and I think there are more up on the board than are actually said in the movie, and I couldn't find a snapshot of the board, unfortunately. So just the ones that I could find online. So obviously Vanellope's a racer. We know that, right? King Candy's a racer. We know that, too. Then you have Taffeta Mutton Fudge.
Mm.
Rancis Fluggerbutter.
Yes.
Snowana Rainbow. Candlehead. Gloyd Orange Boar. And Crumbelina de Carmelo. Those are the ones that I could find names for. I'm sure there were at least twice as many racers than that. Because I think Vanellope was number 16, right? So there should be 16 races.
Yeah, she was.
And I only named about 8, so.
They are fantastic names, and I want that game. I'm just saying. So they strike this deal, and then they have to go and build a cart. So they have to break into the cart facility in King Candy's Castle City area and build the cart, which, of course, Ralph is only good for wrecking things. He's not good for building things. And the whole thing is building the cart is a bunch of mini games. And Ralph basically wrecks all the games and comes up with a cart that's just a big conglomeration of goop.
Yes.
But Vanellope loves it.
She does. She does. Plus, can we just talk about so we mentioned him earlier with Beard Papa, but Beard Papa is the guard for the factory here.
Yeah.
Now, Beard Papa is famous for cream puffs. It's like another like donut type place, but they make they're famous for their cream puffs. Okay. This is actually the character that is their icon. Like, you can go look this up online. I'll make sure that there's a link in the show notes. Don't worry, folks. And you can actually find it online. And it's just hysterical that Beer Papa is the guard for the thing. I don't know why. It's just funny.
But yeah, they come up with this disastrous cart. They sign it. Vanellope's all excited, and then we cut over to Felix and Calhoun, who are trying to find all these different things, and it's Felix is getting very enamored of her because they fall in the chocolate quicksand, or the chocolate Nesquik sand. Yes, you heard me, Nesquik sand.
Oh, yeah.
But they're able to get the laughing vines to help them out because Felix has Calhoun slap him repeatedly, which he then fixes his face with his hammer, which I know makes no sense, but it does work.
Yep. Laffy Taffy.
The Laffy vines come down and grab him and pull him up. And he's carrying her up with him. And there's, you know, the sun shining down and they start becoming enamored of each other. But she has to pull away, of course, because of her tragic backstory.
Enough of the goo goo eyes or whatever she says.
Yeah.
Didn't she start shooting? I like the shooting.
No, she shoots into the sky to scare off the Laffy Taffy.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, the movie is so enjoyable, but my God, had they had anybody else other than Jane Lynch being the voice for this character would have been like nothing. But the fact that it's her and she's so good at delivering those terse lines, because it's one of the things she's famous for.
Yep.
Right? And so it's just so perfect.
She's awesome.
It is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, we have Ralph and Vanellope are trying to figure out what they're going to do. And they manage to escape from King Candy's folks and hide out in Diet Coke Mountain, which is Vanellope found this place that, the mountain's not actually solid. You can drive through it, but nobody can see it. And so she's kind of made her home there. And Ralph, is not really sure how this is going to work. She doesn't even know how to drive or anything. And what he manages to do is he pounds out a racetrack inside of the mountain for her to practice on. He has to be pretty careful, though, because there's the top of Diet Coke Mountain is full of Mentos.
Yes.
And so when the Mentos stalactites fall into the Diet Coke, they explode.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure I screamed in the theater, brilliant!
Yeah, I don't know if everyone knows this, I'm online all the time, and it's an old meme, it goes back into the 90s, as to the whole Mentos and diet soda thing. But basically, yes, if you take a Mento and drop it in a thing of diet soda, the diet soda will start to shoot a geyser out of the top of the diet soda bottle. Usually done with a 2-liter, by the way, folks. Although you can do it with the 20-ounces, too. I have a video which I'll link to in the show notes where Mythbusters scientifically explains how it works, how the reaction works. And it was made famous as part of the internet meme scheme by the band Weezer in their video for the song Pork and Beans.
Oh my gosh, I love that group and I love that song.
So the fountain in Las Vegas. I forget what the hotel is. The Bellagio fountain, right?
Yeah.
They do that as Diet Coke and Mentos bottles in that video.
Okay. I'm going to have to watch that again. That's funny.
So.
But it's an important plot point in this.
It is.
Which we will get to later.
Well, we didn't explain why it's an important plot point. We kind of glossed over that.
Well, it's not important. Oh, that's true. That's a good point. A good point. But we will go back to that when we get to there.
Perfect.
No need to spoil in advance.
That's fine. Done.
Yes. So they practice the racing inside of the mountain, right? And what ends up happening is King Candy has to figure out a way. He just, for whatever reason, he cannot have Vanellope race. And we can't figure out why this is, right, until later on, Vanellope is gone, and he comes up, King Candy does, to Ralph alone with Ralph's medal. And we find out that King Candy can go into the code of the game itself.
the Konami code.
Yes, and he can move things around. So he goes into the code, finds Ralph's medal, comes and meets Ralph, and he explains the story behind Vanellope. That Vanellope is a glitch in the game. She's not really connected to the game, but she can't leave the game. Vanellope says this to Ralph early on, right? Because she's a glitch, she can't leave the game. She can't hop from game to game like Ralph does.
Right, because she's not complete is the concept. I mean, here's where glitches come about, because it was actually glitch today in a computer program means something different than it did back in the early video game days. Basically, a lot of times it was once you had the something programmed into the ROM chip, it was too hard to pull it out of the ROM code, so you would just stop using it, but you'd leave it in the code, and those were referred to as glitches. back in early ROM video game days. So, you know, all the Oedipic arcade games. So that's where the concept comes from. That's why they kind of build on it, because she's, as we learn in the code, she's disconnected from the actual game.
There we go.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right. Which we see, the visual representation of that, when he goes into the code to push her to go get the medal, right? We see, as he's leaving, you see Vanellope von Schweetz over on the side.
Yes, you do. And, you do.
And so when he's explaining to Ralph, what he says is, you know, when he took over, when he's King Candy, and, you know, he knew that she's a glitch, what will happen is if she starts racing and the players see her glitch, in other words, pixelate and appear somewhere else, they won't like her. And they'll quit playing the game, and eventually the game will get unplugged, and everyone else in the game will be able to hop over to something else. But she won't be able to leave. And so it's for her own good that he doesn't want her to die. This is King Candy's explanation. It should be stated that it's King Candy explaining this. And he's been the bad guy in the movie so far.
Well, he hasn't been a good guy. We don't really know what's going on at this point in time.
Well, he's been chasing Ralph and Vanellope. Let's put it that way.
That's true. But somehow, so we know something weird is going on. He has some ability to control the game he's in, which seems out of the ordinary.
Correct.
Right? It doesn't seem like it's something he should be able to do. By the way, I mentioned the Konami code, but I love that's how he unlocks the door to his vault, is with a NES controller. And he does the up, down, down, left, right, left, yes. Right, BA, right?
That was one of those other moments in the theater where I totally geeked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a cheat code, folks, for those who don't know.
Indeed.
And pretty much every video game console has some form of it built into their controller, just so you know that, yeah. In at least some game.
And all it takes is a nice Google search to find it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So Ralph breaks the cart in a very heartbreaking scene because he doesn't want Vanellope to die. All she wants is to race, and Ralph has to break the cart right in front of her. Lots of people in my theater were crying when this happened. I don't know about you guys.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I didn't. At this point, I'm starting to get an idea of what was going on, so I didn't really find this to be the... To me, this was sad, but it's hard... I didn't really feel particularly... I wasn't, like, teary, is what I'm saying. It was just a sad moment.
Yeah, I wasn't either, actually. Yeah, it was just disappointing more than anything else for me.
Gotcha. Okay, so it was just me, then, is what you're saying.
Sorry.
Yes. I was sad, I think.
Okay, thank you, Cheryl.
You're on
the good side again.
It's not five times, so it's hard to tell.
So, of course, Ralph has to leave, and we get one thing we should note. It's like Felix, throughout the movie, everyone's been saying that Ralph's gone turbo, and we don't really know what that means. And it's Felix who gets to explain this to Calhoun, because apparently back in the old days there was a racing game called Turbo. And when Turbo noticed that the main character in that game noticed that people in another game were getting attention, he game jumped to that other game and just tried to, you know, run his way across the other game's racetrack, even though it was, it wasn't his game.
Yeah.
So he ends up, but he would, you know, drive across the racetrack yelling, "It's Turbo-tastic!" That was his catchphrase. And it ended up getting both games unplugged. And so everybody's really scared of Ralph going turbo.
It is a concern.
Felix who has to explain this, yes. So Ralph he gets his medal, and he goes back to Fix-It Felix Jr., and it's abandoned. Because all the Nicelanders have moved out because they're going to get unplugged in the morning. The only one who's left there is Gene. He's up in the penthouse. And Gene, being a man of his word, you know, Ralph shows him the medal and gives him the penthouse. And Ralph is beside himself, distraught because of what he's done to Vanellope. And he's just, you know, he can't handle the fact that basically he's ruined his game and he's ruined Vanellope. So he's kind of gone turbo already. So Ralph is there in the penthouse. He's extremely distraught. And he's just, you know, he's fed up because he's ruined his game and everyone else's. And he throws the metal, and it hits the glass, and it knocks the flyer down. Knocks the flyer down where he can see out the glass again, and he sees the cabinet of the Sugar Rush game, and he sees Vanellope on it, which means that she's not a glitch. She was intended to be there all along. So he has to go back to Sugar Rush, and he has to find Felix, who has been captured by King Candy, because he goes looking for help after Sergeant Calhoun disappears on him, and he gets locked in the dungeon. And as you mentioned earlier, Todd, Felix is upset because every time he tries to get out by using his hammer to bend the bars, it just fixes the bars.
Yeah, he goes, "Why must I always fix things?"
Yeah. So Felix ends up getting broken out by Ralph, who brings him the pieces of the cart, and Felix makes him promise, or he promises, that he will not try to be good again. He's going to be the bad guy. He's not going to try to run away again, and Felix fixes the cart for him so they can take it to Vanellope. They break Vanellope out, and they're ready to go off to the race. So they manage to get to the race, and as the race begins, Vanellope is in the race, even though King Candy is upset. So they start the race, and the cybugs that Calhoun has discovered have laid eggs all underneath Sugar Rush. As the race begins, the cybugs start hatching and basically explode out of everywhere while the race is going on. It's high drama, people, is what I'm saying.
It's horrifying, people. Horrifying.
Yes, and because earlier in the movie we learned that the cybugs become what they eat, these particular cybugs are all basically like candy creatures.
Oh, I don't even know what to think about that. That was horrible.
Yes, it was terrifying.
Yeah. It was terrifying.
But meanwhile, all the race is going on, and they're trying to figure out how do they kill the cybugs, what do they do, that sort of thing. And while the race is going on, Vanellope is catching up because when she glitches, she tends to like reappear in front of other people. So it's actually working to her benefit. She eventually catches up to King Candy and starts fighting him. She gets captured on his race cart. And then he starts glitching because he's in contact with her, and he reveals himself to be
Turbo.
Yes.
So what's interesting is, if you've only seen this one time, you probably don't catch but they actually give you a lot of hints that he's actually Turbo prior to this. Especially the scene where he goes to get the medal to give the medal back to Ralph, and he goes into the code to get it that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because if you look inside the King Candy program or subroutine, I guess, inside the whole program of the game, you'll see that he has lots of items. And if you look closely, you see Turbo's helmet, you see Turbo's race car
on these
icons and stuff like that. Yeah, well, I didn't see it until like the second or third time through, so don't feel bad. It's not something I caught the first time through either. But it's something I said, I said to myself, well, I wonder, because there was a lot of stuff there. So it's very clever. The other thing that I caught later on is we kind of touched on this, is Ralph saw Vanellope on the side of the video game, which is why he went back to Sugar Rush in the first place. But if you look, the car that King Candy is driving in Sugar Rush is really Vanellope's car that she's in on the side of the game.
Oh, I did not notice that.
Right, neither. So it's all set up, and that's why the castle's pink, right? Because it's not really his castle.
It's Salmon,
sorry.
No, because that's why it's not
I know,
really
that's
his
a joke
castle.
You make. I know, that's why I said, sorry.
Yep.
But, so there's a lot of clues like that along the way that he's not really the guy in charge.
Interesting.
Except Sour Bill
is awesome.
I don't know why but Sour Bill seems like his accomplice. It's like he hung on to King Candy while he goes and messes with the code. So he had yes, his memory was locked, but he just let him out to go see the code.
Well, he doesn't know what
clue.
Yeah, he doesn't know what King Candy's doing though. He just knows he's just the guy on the outside,
holding
right?
Holding
the rope. That's right. He's the official rope holder of the kingdom.
I do like when Ralph has to threaten Sarah Bill.
Yeah, he puts them in his mouth. That is kind of funny.
He's like, please don't put me back in that gross mouth.
Yes. The yes, torture of Sour Bill is nice.
A running gag throughout the movie is Ralph's halitosis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so while we find that out and Vanellope's trying to race and defeat King Candy / Turbo, they're trying to defeat the Cybugs. And so it's important to note, as Todd mentioned, we didn't talk about this in Heroes Duty. And the way that they defeat the Cybugs in Heroes Duty is a beacon goes off, which is a giant, you know, light shooting into the sky, and it attracts all the bugs. They go and...
It's a bug zapper.
Yeah. So the only way to fix it in Sugar Rush is to have a beacon, but they don't know how to do that. And it's Ralph who figures it out as one of the Cybugs eats King Candy and helps Vanellope to get past him. Ralph is trying to figure out how to beat the Cybugs, and he remembers the Diet Coke Mountain. And when the new Cybug that has merged with King Candy into this giant bug-like...
King Candy...
Turbo...
Yeah. That. He picks Ralph up as Ralph is trying to help Vanellope win and carries him up into the sky. And it's Ralph who figures out and gets when they get over Diet Coke Mountain what he can do. And he wriggles loose and starts plummeting towards the mountain with his fist out. Of course, the bug follows him when he hits the Mentos on top of the mountain, and they fight there for a little while until Ralph manages to hit the Mentos enough to drop them into the Diet Coke Mountain, creating the beacon, which then attracts all of the Cybugs and starts the end of all the Cybugs, including Turbo.
Yes, Turbo was trying to fight it. He was like, why am I going to light? I don't want to go into light. Go into light.
That was funny.
Yes, it's very good. Yes. I mean, the important thing that we forgot to mention is that Sour Bill kind of sort of reveals that he doesn't quite know what will happen, but he knows that Vanellope will, when she crosses the finish line, the game will reset.
Yes.
Right, that's important.
Right, that's the thing, is she has to cross the finish line, because right after this, they manage to reconstruct the finish line after it's been destroyed. And push her across. And what happens is, it turns out Vanellope is the princess and the ruler of Sugar Rush. And it was the fact that Turbo came in and rewrote the code that made everything switch around.
Yes. By the way, you know that makes her our fourth Disney princess this year, right? Well, third, I guess, technically, based on order. Did you know that?
Okay, so I've got Merida. I've got her.
Yep. Okay, so a TV show just started on Disney Junior called Sophia the First, where she's a princess.
Okay.
Right, she's a Disney princess. But guess who number four is technically number two? Based on
Black Widow.
No.
Okay.
Dude, we talked about it earlier.
Princess what? Leia.
Princess Leia is now a Disney princess.
Yes, that's right.
Woohoo! I want my bippity boppity Leia buns.
I would pay good money for that. But that's the big thing is Vanellope is now in charge. She's the queen, and her glitch ability is actually a benefit while she's racing, as we found in the race. And Felix and Ralph get back to their game, and they keep it from getting unplugged. Felix manages to marry Calhoun.
Yay!
But no tragic ending this time.
That's right. No tragic ending, because this time everybody points their guns at the window where the bug crashed the last time. Yes. By the way, here's something I don't understand, right? So based on the whole church thing, does that mean there's, like, in addition to this devastated bug world inside Heroes Duty, that there's, like, one church?
I'm thinking so. Because why on earth would you go back there?
I don't know. It's hard to say.
I do like when she starts saying that she's going to start executing people, and then Calhoun goes, this game just got addressed.
Yeah.
Again, Jane Lynch. awesome.
Oh yeah.
Very much so.
And they give all the Cuber characters jobs.
Yeah, yay! They take all the abandoned characters into Fix-It Felix Jr. as more bonus levels.
Bonus level characters, that's right.
And I love Ralph helps to build Cubert a sideways looking house.
With Felix's assistance.
Yes.
I also love how they have the dynamite from Cubert at one point blowing up Gene. I don't know if you caught that when they're showing the game.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just saying. So by the way, there are two more Star Wars references that I forgot to mention.
Okay.
One of them you probably everybody gets obviously got, because that's at one point Ralph is hiding from Winchell and Duncan under one of the chocolate lakes, and he's using a straw, and his breathing sound is literally lifted from Star Wars as the Darth Vader breathing noise.
Yes.
It's a direct lift. But the other one is that when they're doing the very, very beginning of the movie, when they're doing the aging montage of Litwax Arcade, okay, one of the games that pops up is the 1983 Wireframe Star Wars game. You know what I'm talking about, Ryan?
Yeah.
I used to live in that game. We had a sit-down version. Yeah, the sit-down version was in the Adventureland arcade, and we used to sit in there all the time because we were all always in the arcade. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, totally awesome. So yeah,
nice. Yeah, but that's the end of Wreck-It Ralph, except for the amazing ending credits.
They are amazing ending credits. Basically, the ending credits are now that Penelope's like a real program, now she can go outside the game, and I kind of had to go through some adventures in all the other games that she never got to go to before. That's basically the credits.
Yeah.
In a nutshell. And
it's,
by the way,
it's fantastic.
Yes, and the movie ends with the 256 level Pac-Man kill screen.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. Yes, for those that don't know, the kill screen is because the level was only an 8-bit number, so when it rolled to 256, that goes outside of 8 bits, and so it would overflow into whatever the next buffer was, and it would spill into the screen, so that's where that all came from. Oh. And it literally looked like that on the Pac-Man board.
No.
So cool.
Yeah, so cool. I mean, this so much good in this movie.
Indeed. It's really a love letter to the video games of the last 30 years. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just so much nostalgia, but not in a looking back way, in a just celebrating way.
Yeah. But there's also we should probably mention that, because there are a lot of people that I know that are Skrillex fans, and he wrote the Bug Hunt music that's used in Heroes Duty. Right, the music that's while they're fighting in the game.
Oh yeah.
And he also appears as the DJ in Felix's party.
Oh, nice.
Yes, he's the DJ up in the party. So that's important. I kind of sort of like these songs are not on the album, but they were the songs that were in the trailer, and I thought they would mention them because I really felt that it set the mood for what the movie would be. Well in advance, okay? In the first trailer, the two songs are Once in a Lifetime by Talking Heads and then Good Feeling by Flo Rida, okay?
Yeah.
And in the second trailer, you have Funky Town by Lips Incorporated and Some Nights by Fun. And I think those four songs, like, I spent a lot of my time in the preceding weeks of the movie coming out just listening to those four songs in a playlist over and over again, because I really felt that they just set a really good tone for what this movie's about.
Yeah. I love that song by Fun, Some Nights. I was listening to that a lot too before the film came out.
Very cool. All right. Time for ratings.
Yay! I'm excited. Okay.
All right. You're excited, Bree. Go first then.
Okay, so you guys have to know something. as excited as I was about going to see a film based on video games, in the theater, for some reason, I was not that excited. I don't know, like, it was weird. In the coming weeks, I was really looking forward to it, but actually sitting in the theater, I was not, you know, amped up for some reason. However, talking about it tonight, I guess I'm in the right mood because now I'm all excited about it again and I want to see it again. I was actually going to come into this and give this film a 3.5, but I'm actually going to go with a 4. I'm going to give it a solid 4. I absolutely love it. It brings out the gamer in me, and I would want to play Q-Bert and Pong and Pac-Man and everything all over again, especially Street Fighter, as I mentioned before. But no, it is a family film, heartwarming. I will say I'm not a big fan of Vanellope. I think I'm going to get used to her the more times I watch the film. But maybe that's what kind of turned me off in the theater. I don't know. But I do look forward to seeing it again, and I look forward to getting it on DVD when it comes out. So I'm going with a 4.
Very well. All right. Cheryl, are you going to give it a star for each time you've seen it?
I probably am, because I am going to give this a 5.
Woo!
Because I used to, you know, Todd will tell you, I used to always take him to the arcade. When we went out places, I used to go to different arcades. We used to go to different arcades.
We did. We used to drive around and go to arcades when we were, you know, first seeing each other. So,
I used to live in near Abington, Massachusetts, which had an arcade. Then when Somerville had Fun Spot, right? Was it
Fun Spot? Yeah, I still have some tokens from Fun Spot's down here. What is it called? I can't remember what it's called, but I still have some tokens.
It's Fun Something in Somerville. Someone who was yelling at the podcast will tell me later what it is in Somerville, Massachusetts, that recently closed. Mm-hmm. Now I live now near Disney Quest, so I am just glad I guess can go now back to the arcade and go play games.
Yes.
I love them racing games.
Yeah, you do. Yes, you do.
And that's why there needs to be a stand-up Sugar Rush.
Sugar Rush. S-U-G-A-R. Sorry, I'm doing it again.
Please go ahead, because I believe it is your turn, sir.
I just really enjoy it. I mean, it's got so much nostalgia. I've played like something like 95% of the video games you see references to in this movie. So that's the other half of it. It's finished most of them too, and for me it's a 4.75. It's awesome. It's worth it. I you should definitely see it, because it's got something for everyone.
I'm right there with you guys. I'm with Bree actually. I'm gonna go with a 4, but for me this one's just a hair below Tangled. See what I did there?
Yeah,
A hair lower than Tangled.
Yes, it's not quite as good as Tangled to me, but I really, really, really liked Tangled. So I can definitely say that Disney Animation has figured out how to make good movies for sure. Between Bolt, between this, between Tangled, I feel like they're really getting their legs underneath them and are turning out some really quality stuff. And I think this is one that, even though it's making a good amount of money, is probably getting a little bit overlooked. So I would urge anyone who ignored our spoiler warnings and listened to this and has not seen it yet, go on through and watch Wreck-It Ralph. You will really enjoy it. I don't think we can do it justice. All right. So that is the end of this week's show. If you disagree with us about Wreck-It Ralph, or if you agree, go over to DisneyFilmProject.com in the show notes and leave a comment there. You can go over to Facebook and find us there, or on Twitter at Diz Film Project. So until next week, folks, we will see you soon.
As your wonderful princess, I hereby decree that everyone who was ever mean to me shall be executed.
Flattery don't charge these batteries, civilian.
If I am good guy, then who else would crush man's skull like sparrow egg between man's thighs?
You hit a guy with glasses. Well played.